The world is currently faced with a COVID-19 pandemic. The COVID-19 pandemic has magnified the world's inequities, and it has become quite clear, as was predicted, that COVID-19 is having devastating effects on both women and people living with non-communicable diseases, or NCDs. Today, we will focus this podcast on women. Women living with non-communicable diseases like cardiovascular disease, hypertension, cancer, mental health disorders, multiple sclerosis, and diabetes have an increased risk of severe complications and death from COVID-19. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday Podcasts, hosted by the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program and Maternal Health Initiative. In today's podcast, I have the pleasure of speaking with two global health experts who are here today to speak about COVID-19's impact on women and people living with NCDs. Our first guest is Dr. Belén Garijo. Belén is a member of the executive board of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany, and CEO of Healthcare. She joined Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany in 2011 as chief operating officer of the biopharma business, becoming president and CEO of Healthcare in 2015. Belén started her career as a practicing physician at La Paz Hospital in Madrid before moving to the pharmaceutical industry. In the United States, EMD Serrano is a business affiliate of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany. Our second guest today is Dr. Felicia Nall. Felicia is an international health economist currently serving as the director of the Institute for Advanced Study of the Americas at the University of Miami, where she is also a professor at the Leonard M. Miller School of Medicine. Felicia founded the Mexican nonprofit organization Tomatelo Apecho, a program that undertakes and promotes research, advocacy, and awareness of women's health issues in Latin America. She also currently chairs the Lancet Commission on Gender-Based Violence and Maltreatment of Young People. Thank you both for joining us today to discuss the really important intersection of COVID-19 and NCDs, as well as the devastating effects COVID-19 has had and will continue to have on women around the world. Currently, we're seeing more deaths due to infectious disease than expected. Please walk us through how this excess mortality due to COVID-19 will ultimately also increase the deaths due to NCDs.
Hello, Sarah, good afternoon, and thank you for the invitation to participate in today's podcast. Indeed, we have seen how COVID-19 has drastically changed our world and the way we are looking at infectious diseases now in countries in which, you know, we have been almost never confronted before with a pandemic of this magnitude. NCDs have raised the risk of and the severity of the COVID-19 infection. Take Italy, for example. A very recent report published by The Lancet that revealed that the majority of the patients, over 96% who have died in a hospital from the COVID-19 infection had associated comorbidities, primarily, once again, non-communicable diseases. And similar rates have been reported in Spain, in China, and in the US. So yes, COVID-19 has had a global reach. However, the mortality has been variable. When you take a look at, you know, what is the mortality rate per 1 million inhabitants, you see a lot of diversity. And what has been consistent amongst all the countries is the association between severity of the infection and underlying diseases.
Thank you very much, Belén. Felicia, would you like to also answer that question?
Sarah, thank you so much for having us join you into the Wilson Center. And Belén, it's such a pleasure and an honor to be collaborating with you again on issues related to NCDs and global health, and particularly gender and women. Just to add to the very important points that Belén shared around the relationships between the mortality figures and what we're seeing in COVID-19 to date and NCDs. So the first point of the excess mortality is that we've got a lot of underreporting compared to what we're seeing of COVID itself. And the second is what's going to happen in the longer run. We've seen entire hospitals being devoted to COVID, and particularly in low and middle income countries like Mexico, the country I call home, probably one of the most important public hospitals for treating complex non-communicable disease conditions that offered access to the poor, the Instituto Nacional de la Nutrición Salvador Subirán has been almost entirely converted into a COVID hospital. So we knew before COVID-19 that the poor had limited access. Right? Now they have much less access, not only for COVID, but for all other issues that they face. In addition, we have several other layers of bias that are going to affect this excess mortality, I think is very important for NCDs. We always knew that there's quite a bit of bias or discrimination against women in access to healthcare, that although women will come and come forward explaining that they're having certain symptoms, these will typically be understated. I think that we're going to see that expressed more and more as we see, particularly in low and middle income countries, sort of a reduction in access to services because of what's happening now and in the future in COVID. And finally, we know that people are afraid to seek care. What we're going to see is people who are not only have less access because the services aren't available, but because they're afraid to go. And that sort of brings us, I think, to one last point, which is that there's also a very important gender divide in how the excess mortality may play out. We've seen quite a bit of discussion around more men dying than women in the data that we have to date. That may change quite a bit when we see the real mortality figures, but also we know that this pandemic is affecting women in a number of ways that are very harsh compared to men. More unemployment, more lack of access to jobs in all but the health sector, more issues of caregiving and less ability to earn income, more exposure to domestic violence. There are a number of ways in which this pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, is weighing more on women. And the risk that we're facing is that we will see the gains of decades, which were not enough, but we're still gains in gender equality, being eroded if we're not careful.
Thank you very much, Felicia. And we do want to focus more of our time on women in a moment. But first, can I ask both of you to speak quickly about your own personal experiences regarding NCDs and COVID-19? And Felicia, we'll let you start that, please.
Of course. And my experience now is so mild compared to what I know that women around the world are facing as they seek access to care. But as many know, and that's the reason why we founded the NGO in Mexico, Tomate lo Pecho, about a decade ago, I was diagnosed with invasive breast cancer in Mexico. And I think the first point to share is the fear of having to wait for a diagnosis, wait to get access, is over an overwhelming amount of stress. And so, you know, my heart goes out to the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of women around the world with different kinds of diseases and men with different kinds of non-communicable diseases who are afraid to come forward or who can't get diagnosed at this time or have to wait for, you know, crucial services that are considered elective but are really so important to our process of healing.
Thank you very much, Felicia, for sharing that personal anecdote as well. And now, Belen, would you like to also answer that question about how you are personally and through your work dealing with the NCDs and COVID-19?
Yes, absolutely. For me personally, as a senior leader in a science and technology company that is providing access to essential medicines, there were three major priorities since the crisis broke in mid-January. First of all, obviously, to ensure the health and the safety of our employees. And I have to say with pride that we have a very low infection rate within the company. And this was because we started very early with sanitation measures, travel bans, and actually providing testing in the workplace that has proven to be very, very useful. The second priority we had was around business continuity. We just cannot afford to stop supplying our medicines to patients in need. And of course, keeping our manufacturing sites and our research labs fully operational during the crisis took a lot of effort on our side and a lot of leadership to be able to provide individual protection equipment that our employees needed to stay at work to keep our supply chain intact. The third priority that we had was the most important and the most inspirational for me personally, which has been contributing very actively to finding therapies that could actually help during the pandemic. This pandemic has really changed the way we are looking at our research focus, and I can tell you that we have right now almost completely focused our efforts in finding solutions for pandemics. I am hoping that we will never forget this and that our pandemic preparedness will be and will stay strong for the future in each and every continent. And of course, as an industry, we can never do that alone. We need to collaborate with others. We need to collaborate with governments. We need to collaborate with academic institutions, with healthcare professionals, with patient associations.
Thank you very much, Belén. And now I'd like to shift our conversation slightly to discuss some ways that women are being affected by COVID-19. And two of the strong initiatives from Merck KGaA Darmstadt Germany really focus on some of the main areas where we've seen women impacted by COVID-19. And the first of those initiatives is Embracing Cares, and the other is the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies platform. So women have been severely affected, as was mentioned, by both unemployment and increased caregiving responsibilities due to COVID-19. And I'd like to hear from both of you about how COVID-19 has particularly affected women in terms of employment and as caregivers themselves, both paid and unpaid.
Women are the majority of service and informal work sectors and are now unemployed. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the U.S., women accounted for up to 55% of the 20.5 million jobs that have been lost in April. In February, the unemployment rate for adult women was 3.1. In April, this has gone up to 15%. In the same period, the unemployment rate for adult men was of 3.6%, and in April, this reached 13%. So in women-dominated sectors such as education and health services, there were significant job losses, up to 2.2 million jobs lost by women compared with 440,000+ lost by men. And this is coming from the Institute of Women's Policy Research. And actually, in marginalized groups, the whole thing looks even worse. Women of color had unemployment rates for up to 16.4% for women of color, and for Hispanic women at 20.2%, or single mothers. In the U.S., one-third of single mothers were already living below the poverty line, and since February, a million of them have lost their jobs. This is going to be really a big issue to deal with.
Following on what Belén said, I think first, we have never seen in this epidemic to date, we have not seen in high-income countries what we are going to begin to see in low- and middle-income countries, I believe, which are a lot of COVID deaths, probably unregistered, happening at home with primarily women caring for these individuals and without any PPE being extremely exposed at the community level. I am very concerned about what that's going to mean, particularly in parts of the world where we know that there's significant population density. It's an urgent call to action to provide more support to caregivers. We always knew that they were undersupported. Now is the time to really think that we should change that. And hopefully if we change it for COVID, we can think about changing that in the future. Another point I think that's so important is we've all around the world come to appropriately celebrate those frontline workers who have been caring for the sick. But I don't think it has been said enough that the vast majority of those health professionals are women. Our Lancet Commission on Women in Health showed that the majority of paid as well as unpaid healthcare is provided by women. Typically though, we know this has been underpaid and undersupported, that the feminization even of the medical profession has been difficult. And I want to highlight, you know, one piece of data and how important that is in the context of this pandemic, which is we have been looking at data over time on the under and unemployment of women trained as physicians. And it's always been much higher than that of men. Even with improvements over time in the case of Mexico, we know that more than 40% of women who are trained as physicians and graduate as physicians are either not working as physicians, not working at all, or able to work only part-time. We have a crisis in the world in which we do not have enough trained medical personnel to meet the needs of the population, yet we have a whole group of under and unemployed women physicians. And I'm sure this extends to other parts of the healthcare professions. And this is something we can urgently do something about.
Thank you, Felicia. And you've really touched on this already, but I'd like to ask you to go a little bit deeper. And as you and Belen have both mentioned, COVID-19 really does magnify these inequities and deep flaws within our health systems. So what do you think, Felicia, that health systems need to do to amplify the needs of the world's most impacted populations?
We've been working on some ideas around how to strengthen health systems in the face of COVID-19. And the first and key lesson is that this cannot be done without a gender transformative response. You cannot have strong health systems if you don't include women, not least which because they are the majority of providers today. But I think this is part of an idea around health system strengthening that has to do with more responsibility and better stewardship, more resilience, more readiness, and more responsiveness. I think Belen mentioned earlier that we can only hope that from this pandemic, we will learn that we need to be better prepared at the country level, as well as individual institutions for pandemics like this. And we do have the chance to be able to do that now. But I think that if we can think about better, stronger leadership and stewardship, and we've seen some incredible examples from women, as well as gender transformative, dedicated male leaders around the world. So it's not only about being a woman, it's about being gender transformative and how you do leadership. All of this requires the inclusion of women as well as men, in fact, of all genders, because otherwise we would never be strong enough, not only to respond to the COVID-19 onslaught, but what we are talking about today, which is the incredible onslaught of NCDs that face low and middle income populations and countries, as well as high income countries. This is all about strengthening our health systems in ways that are inclusive of all genders.
Thank you very much, Felicia. And now I'd like to turn to Belen to pick up on some of the comments that you made, Felicia, and ask Belen how she sees a gender transformative leadership as part of the solution to the current pandemic.
Yes, thank you, Sarah. And, you know, I am so inspired by Felicia's comments that I will focus on building on those because, you know, first of all, I am absolutely sure that you are aware of the articles highlighting that countries that have performed better against COVID-19 are led by women. I have to say that I don't believe this is by chance. There are a number of leadership attributes that have been very well identified in female leaders, which are very, very important to optimally deal with crisis in general. And this is an unprecedented crisis. Empathy and collaboration, anticipation, generosity are key characteristics of effective leaders. If I can share my experience, those behaviors are very visible in female leaders. I think something that Felicia mentioned, and I believe is super important, is that female leaders promote a more inclusive leadership model, and they are willing to listen. They are willing to listen to diverse opinion and voices. They don't believe they know it all. And this is essential for responding to a crisis overall. And this, I believe, has been very important to respond to this pandemic in a more efficient way. At the end, the data speak by themselves. We at Merck, KGAA, Darmstadt, Germany, we have been extremely committed to diversity and inclusion, and I'm very proud to say that My team, our healthcare executive committee, already had 54% women participation, which is actually quite unique in our industry. Since this pandemic, it has provided an opportunity, is that opportunity to demonstrate that a diverse work environment is absolutely key to deal with crises like this.
Absolutely, and thank you. And thank you both to Belen and Felicia for your commentary today. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcasts. To learn more, visit newsecuritybeat.org/dot-mom or follow us on Twitter at Wilson_MHI.